welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green. And joining this week, as always, is Forbes 30 Under 30 education luminary and champion of cursed boba, Sari Riley.
Hello, more epithets. I didn't know I was champion.
And also our resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
Someday I'll get another honorific. What do I have to do?
Become a wolf. Our resident every man and wolf man.
If only, Hank. Way to hit upon one of my greatest wishes and regrets of all time that I can't be.
Your hair is looking sort of wolfman today.
Rachel hasn't cut my hair in a long time. I'm going through it, you know?
By going through it, do you mean slowly turning into a wolfman? By going through the change, as they called it in my family?
Excuse me?
Yeah, you didn't get the talk about the change, Sam?
The last day of my life when I'm 100 years old, I'll be like, my transformation will be complete. I'll be like, finally.
Yeah, but it's a slow transformation, but like it only appears all together when you finally are complete.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The last day of my life when I'm 100 years old.
Yeah, much like a Pokemon evolution. Like that's how it works.
When I reach level 100 and I have high friendship and it's nighttime and I'm holding the right stone, then that's it.
Then you'll start glowing and your dream will come true.
So when Pikachu's level 100, he's 100 years old. Is that what you're implying?
There's a lot of old Pikachus out there.
There's a lot of old guys out there.
And then you'll be like a very old wolf man and you'll try to rip the throat from a rabbit and the rabbit will just be like, I'm faster than you, old man.
Yeah, what are you doing, bud?
Yeah.
Giving me a little
throw a snowball mooch right at your nose. I eat a carrot in front of you. Like, get me. Yeah. So if you could be any cryptid.
Genuinely, I'd be a vampire. I have no problem with being a vampire. I could stay up all night, sleep all day.
Would you just feed on rats like Vampire Lestat in the sewers of Paris?
There's so many deer around here. It would be easy. They just hang out in my yard. I would just be like
the Twilight Boys. They ate deer, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I'd be like, what's up, bud?
No nods in the room. No nods. I know more about Twilight than everyone in the room. This is amazing.
I said exactly because I know precisely that you're correct.
I watched the movie. And I think I did read the first book, actually.
My dad read the books before they were cool because he was like, I like vampires. He was really into Vampire Diaries and things like that. And a local Pacific Northwest author. I might as well support her. And then he was like, I don't think this is a good book, but I'm going to keep reading them to support a local author. And then they got huge. And he was like, well.
Maybe he told a friend who told two friends and they told two friends, you know?
I brought them to my school because of that. Because bought a copy and I was like, this is fine. And then I didn't participate in the fandom aspect of it. Like other people from my school took road trips to Forks, Washington, because it's like far-ish,
would, like,
but not
do
too
Forks
far
trips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, man. I've been alive a long time, you guys. I think if on this topic, I think if I was a cryptid, I'd be a Stephanie Meyer because it feels like it comes with a lot of money.
Oh, you want to be a rich cryptid. You could be a leprechaun or something.
Yeah. What kind of cryptids? Goblins got their own special gold, but I don't think you can spend it.
Dragons have hordes, but is a dragon a cryptid? Are these some of these aren't cryptids, I feel like.
I think that we can be loose. As we found here on SciShow Tangents, defining things is very messy.
No one really knows. It's just a guy that you see out of the corner of your eye. That's a cryptid.
You know, I have a new conspiracy theory I have to tell you about real quick, that Apple has increased how easy it is to trip Siri, because that never used to happen to me. And now every time I say your name, it happens to me. It goes, hello, what do you need?
It's very are you bringing that up because Siri is probably a cryptid?
She is probably the closest to a real world ghost or something. Yeah.
Siri and Bored Apes. Those are the two real world cryptids that actually happened.
Well, I don't want to be either of those. I want to be a swamp monster.
A swamp.
Yeah, not minding my own business in the water. Sometimes emerge.
Just like Shrek. Just like this. Yeah.
Get out of here. Sarah, I'm podcasting.
I want to be Stephanie Meyer, and I think that Sam wants
I'm
to
be.
I'm
just going to be a vampire. What a boring answer in retrospect.
Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory and for Hank Bucks, which I will be awarding as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of these two goons will be the winner. Now, as always, we're going to introduce this week's topic with a traditional science poem this week from Sari.
Hope is the thing with feathers, poetically at least, but actually these delicate fans are just weird growths of beast. Mm. Beta keratins twisted and packed into interlocking barbs for fluffy warmth or a mighty flap or neon mating garb. The diversity of plumage outcompetes that of all birds. So thank you, evolution, for never not being absurd.
Sari, Hank, real fast, tell me what's the easiest choice that you can make of all choices.
The pizza that is currently in the fridge.
Oh, baby, I love to hear that.
Easiest choice? Take a nap, always. What do I want to do? Lay? Nothing.
That's great. Hey, here's a super easy choice, just right off the top of my head. Selling with Shopify. Now, I know all about Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, online or in person, with the internet's best converting checkout, 35% better on average compared to other leading e-commerce platforms. But Hank, why don't you tell us why you and your company, DFTBA, love Shopify so much?
We started DFTBA in 2007, and we had some non-Shopify providers early on, and switching over to Shopify was the best choice that we could have made. Now, we didn't know that when we made it, but it seemed like they knew what was going on and they were going to be around for a long time. And it turned out we were right. And now they really are the industry standard. They have a whole developer ecosystem where lots of people make products inside of their app system. And so you can always add new and cool things into your Shopify so that you can get all of the things that you need to get done for your specific business done. And I feel very kind of grateful that we picked Shopify when we did so that we have never had to switch, because switching is bad.
Wondering if you should give Shopify a try, like Hank and DFTBA are using it. Let me make that decision a little easier for you. What if all it costs to try it for a month was $1? That's right. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/tangents.
The topic for the day is feathers, specifically feathers.
Yes, can I guess that this one has extremely easy to define? There's no question about what a feather is.
I'm gonna defy Sam's explanation guess and say that actually probably there's a place where it gets fuzzy.
I also thought it would be simple. But feather scientists are sitting on the biggest, like, deep rabbit hole of what even is a feather. Oh, there are so many different kinds of feathers. They're super weird. And when you start thinking about them too hard, you get grossed out. Or at least this is my experience.
Okay.
It is weird that they sort of, like, get oozed out of the skin.
Yeah. Like, they are skin growths. And I guess everything. Like, hair is technically a skin growth. And scales are technically a skin growth. But they are, according to some sources, like one of the most complex skin structures, like part of the integumentary system. So like the outer protection on vertebrates, they are one of the most complex structures.
Your skin, is that the integumentary system?
Yeah. So like skin, nails, hooves, scales.
Okay.
But like feathers, compared to something like skin, which is very complex, it has pores and whatnot, or compared to something like scales, which have kind of like a relatively uniform structure all around, there are so many different types of feathers that can form. If you picture a feather that comes to mind, that is probably a wing or a tail feather, like that smooth shaped. They are specialized for flight, either for like pushing air or for steering mid-flight. And they have a clear central shaft, and these sticky outy parts are called barbs or barbules, and they are aligned and usually intertwined. But then you get into so many different types. There are like these feathers called contour feathers that start getting a little fluffier, that kind of give birds their shape. They're down feathers, which are the stuff beneath that, that help keep birds warm. But then you get into things like phyloplumes, which are short feathers with just like a couple barbs at the end, and they work like whiskers for birds. Like they are feathers that work like whiskers.
Why not?
There are bristles, which are just feathers without the side bits.
And just a stick?
Just a stick sticking out of the bird.
Who has those?
It's a feather hair.
Halfway between feather hair. But, or there are feathers that have all kinds of weird designs, like tail feathers that are mostly stick, but then at the end they have a weird fan or a swirl or a twirl.
But these are all feathers. There's nobody saying that is and isn't a feather, right?
Yeah. No one's saying that that isn't a feather, but like you think about them as weird skin growths. Uh-huh. And how do they form like that? Where it gets weird biologically, keratin-wise, and maybe this is me overthinking it now, is like trying to define what makes a feather from that. It's like, oh, it's a structure made of this protein, and it looks weird.
Uh-huh.
But it can look weird in 100 different ways.
What is the protein it's made of?
Keratin.
So it's just another, like, just like hair. It's just another keratinous structure.
Yeah.
And so at what point is it not a hair anymore? Is there like a biochemical difference, or is it just because it looks a certain way? Because like famously, birds do not have hair. Only mammals have hair.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so, but like, why? Mm. What's the thing that, like, do we just have, does it turn out that we have feathers, or did the human bird, like last common ancestor, what did that thing have?
Oh.
Did it have feathers. Hair or feathers?
Did feathers turn into hair?
Actually, I don't know.
Ah.
I think they were independent. I think they, because they are feather follicles and there are hair follicles, but I think those are convergent evolution. I think there are slightly different forms of keratin in mammalian hair, horns, hooves compared to the keratins found in reptiles, birds, claws, scales, beaks, shells, feathers.
Mm-hmm.
But then it gets still fuzzy a little bit of what these growths are.
It seems like what was before feathers and hairs with scales. Scales were first, and then like that was the biochemical ancestor anyway of both feathers and hairs.
And some birds' feathers look kind of like hair. If you look up a kiwi, it's shaggy little guy,
a little baby chick. That looks like it just has hair all over it. Mm-hmm. Little fuzzy fella.
Oh man, you guys! I did not realize how distantly birds and people are related.
Was it like a worm or something?
Yeah, like we're the same distance from alligators.
And how distant is that, though? Is that like talking worm territory or?
No, it had a spine. It had a vertebra. Yeah.
It was bone territory.
Yeah. Okay.
Bone territory. I actually, now that I hear all of this, I feel like, hey, feathers are a pretty specific thing.
I agree. Sari's trying to convince us of not, but. Trying to inject some drama.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I'm bringing myself to this definition.
You're always trying to start shit, Sari. So this word, I bet, is old as heck because people have been using these things for a long time.
Yeah, and I couldn't find anything really interesting about it because we just pointed it out because birds have been around and we were like, well, that's a feather. So it comes from the old English word feather, which is of Germanic origin from the German fetter.
Oh.
And then somewhere in between that, I cannot find the linguistic link, but the root is from Latin penna, which means feather, and then is also the root word that led to pen, because a quill pen.
Because they were the same thing for a long time.
Yep. Mm. Had it on birds, and then you plucked it out, and then you wrote a little poem. You wrote a little song for your neighbor.
Nobody writes songs for their neighbors anymore.
Yeah. Back in the day, people were writing odes. People were writing epic poems.
You just show up at your neighbor's house and you just like hand them, and it's like, somebody once told me the world is okay. Now it's going to be time to move on to the quiz portion of our show. This week, we're going to be playing a game called TORF. It's truth or fail. In 1996, paleontologists discovered dinosaur fossils with some surprising things on them. They were feathers. And since that discovery, paleontologists have continued finding more examples of feathery dinosaurs. Most of them seem to belong to meat-eating dinosaurs called theropods. And the more examples we find, the more questions scientists have about how and why feathers evolved in dinosaurs. So today, our truth or fail is all about dinosaur feathers. I will present you three tales, but only one of them is true. It's up to you to figure out which is the true story. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Story number one. When scientists peered into a sample of amber from Spain, they found a bunch of downy dinosaur feathers packed together densely. The dinosaur that gave rise to the feathers is unknown. But what was more interesting to scientists was what they found buried inside, larval molts. belonging to an ancestor of modern-day feather and skin-eating beetles called dermestids. Or it might be story number two. Feathers may have evolved since dinosaurs roamed the earth, but that does not mean that we can't use them to evolve our modern day technologies, like badminton shuttlecocks. A badminton company has developed a new shuttlecock whose nylon feathers are inspired by the short feathery fibers found on Dylong paradoxus, a predator related to T-Rex, with the promise that these feathers will make a more aerodynamic birdie. Or maybe is fact number three. After paleontologists identified dinosaur fossils with feathers similar to modern aquatic birds, scientists wanted to see how their feathers might have evolved and led to the modern-day aquatic bird feather. So they constructed robot ducks decorated with synthetic feathers inspired by the fossilized feathers and found that these feathers were not as efficient at releasing water compared to duck feathers. So either it's story number one, dinosaurs may have had to contend with feather-eating beetles, story number two, badminton company created a dinosaur birdie, or story number three, scientists built a robo-duck with dinosaur feathers.
When researching feathers, all you find is, scientists thought this about dinosaur feathers. Scientists thought that about dinosaur feathers. So I saw a version of all of these stories. I didn't read any of them, so I have no idea, but I know that they all are something. I don't think the shuttlecock one could be right, because why would you pick something old from before feathers were any good to be aerodynamic? That's my only thought.
Who's to say that just because it's old doesn't mean it's good? Some of the best things in life are old, like kisses.
I'm a zoomer, so you know, I don't like old people.
That's what I always see when I look at your literal gray hairs.
I had gray hairs when I was 14, so when I was a zoomer, I did have gray hairs, okay?
That's not how generations work, but yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, we just become each generation, yeah, right?
To be fair, every old person, I'm pretty sure, will be a boomer for the rest of history.
That'll be interesting to see if they just start calling people boomers after the boomers
are age gone. Into boomer, that is a permanent age of humanity now.
As soon as you start griping about not singing your neighbor's songs, you boomer immediately. Yeah, boomer. Uh-oh.
That's nobody writes me poems anymore. Yeah.
They don't make shuttlecocks like they used to back in the dino day. I also am skeptical about that, because I know that they make them with feathers, and it's something to do with you only want feathers from one wing so they spiral good.
Oh, interesting.
Or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is an extrapolation of just the fact that shuttlecocks exist, perhaps.
And are made of feathers, yes. Yeah. The other two, though, I know they're always finding everything in amber. Everything's in amber.
Yeah.
Because it's a good preservation method. Something died, something dropped a feather.
And bugs love hanging out on trees, so they're always getting trapped in there.
The problem is I have very bad paleontology knowledge. So I don't, like, the Spain part is throwing me, because I feel like a lot of these amber specimens are usually, like, East Asia, but dinosaurs are all over the continents, and the continents have rearranged. So, you know. Yeah.
I think I saw a version of the robot duck thing that was not this story, but something about ducks doing something else. So I don't think it's that one. I do think it's maybe the amber one, because that just seems right to me.
That one also rings the most true to me. I'm not going to metagame. I'm too tired to metagame. I think it's the amber one too. I'm going to go with my instinct.
Two amber votes?
Yes. Two amber, two furious.
Yes, that... Amber. I'm locking in for Amber.
All right. Dylong paradoxus is a small relative of Tyrannosaurus rex, reaching 2 meters long. And some fossils show that the dinosaur was likely covered in a fluffy layer of proto feathers, but no one's ever tried to make badminton birdies with them.
Okay, phew.
Additionally, scientists in South Korea recently built a robotic dinosaur to test out a theory about how their feathers may have been used to flush out prey. So that's cool, but nobody ever built a robo-duck with dinosaur feathers. It's true. Dermestids, also called skin beetles, were found in fossilized amber along with some dinosaur fluff. You guys are both correct.
Hooray.
Do you like the part where I made you think over and over again that you failed?
Yeah, that was a fun way to present it.
A lot of twists and turns.
Apparently, we can't conclude much about whether or not the mystery dinosaur the feathers came from would have had beetles as a pest. According to the scientists involved in the study, the larvae weren't feeding on the living feathers and didn't have the structures in modern dermestids that they use to irritate the skins of their host. So they think the beetles probably were not causing the dinosaurs much harm. Sounds lovely. Oh,
that's nice.
Birds do look really creepy if they have like some sort of feather parasite and so lose a patch of it.
They need their feathers for sure.
They need their feathers to be cute, to be wholesome. And then as soon as those are gone, it's like, oh, I see how you are an avian dinosaur.
Uh-huh. Humans are really the only animal that looks good naked.
Well, that's good. That's a nice, safe statement to make. Yeah,
I think that's true. I think you're right.
Yeah, like you see a hairless cat, you're like, nope. Hairless bears, very bad.
Yeah, really terrible. Scary. Really scary.
So bad. I don't know. What other naked animals we got out there?
I mean, really, hairless cats are the closest to being acceptable, and they're pretty far from acceptable.
Pretty far
so I think you're right. Naked mole
Maybe
rat,
a sheep?
Not good. A sheep shaved looks good.
A sheep.
A completely hairless sheep, I think, would maybe just look kind of normal, I guess.
Yeah.
But
yeah, naked mole rats don't have any hair, and they look very bad. Hippos, whales.
Pretty good.
Whales look great. Naked.
And dolphins.
Whales are dolphins. Dolphins are whales.
Well, okay. Not to me. Not to me.
I had somebody ask me recently, they were like, what's the difference between a dolphin and a porpoise? And I looked it up and I was like, absolutely nothing. Like, there are two different things. We call some things dolphins and some things porpoises, but taxonomically, no sense to the what we call what. Huh. So I think we should just call all of them whales. And that's I'm sticking to it. Because I don't want to say cetacean.
Oh,
I think I'm terrible.
I agree with you. I think you're right.
But you got to have at least another adjective. You got to have big whale, fun whale.
Happy whale, mean whale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, then within that, you say blue whale. Blue whale and dolphin. But when you say both, you are saying whale. Dolphin is whale from now on.
Got it.
This is
dolphin
law,
is whale.
Science law.
But if you're talking about dolphin, then you say what you say.
I think fun whale was my fun dolphin.
Whale? A fun whale. Look at that naked fun whale.
Yeah. Look at that naked fun whale. It sure does look good.
Looking pretty good over there.
Man, it looks like he could have a good time, if you know what I mean.
A hairy dolphin would be really disturbing, too.
Hairy dolphin! Hairy dolphin!
I think all the animals around us have the appropriate amount of covering when they are healthy.
Yeah.
It all worked out somehow.
Yeah.
Somehow. I like the idea, except for naked mole rats. They really, that did not. That's the wrong call. Yes. I love the idea that like dolphins would like swim and like they like have super sleek hair just sort of like flowing behind them. But then when they dry off on land after a little bit, it's just like a big fro.
Yeah. I like that too.
It's like super fluffy curly hairs.
Yeah.
Next, we're going to take a short break. Beautiful. Then it'll be time for the fact off.
SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Money is annoying. You have to remember so much stuff, like your bank account password and your PIN number. You got to balance your checkbook, and I don't even know what that means to balance your checkbook. You got to put all your receipts in a folder or something probably too. And who has time for all that? Not me, the old money dummy himself. But if you don't manage your finances, there can be dire consequences. Like maybe, for instance, you pay your utility bill twice. Huh?
You know, we all make mistakes. We all move sometimes. My partner and I moved recently. I didn't think to check the old utility accounts, but then I was doing my taxes and going through all the utility bills. And we logged into our old account and I was like, what the heck? There's a couple $100 bill here for an apartment that we don't live in anymore. Mm. What's going on here?
The electric company's just like, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I was just too busy and too tired to figure out that out until mid-February when I was like, oh, shoot. But boy, would it have been easier if we had an app that said, you're paying your utility bill twice.
The unfortunate truth of the matter is important to keep on top of your finances. But the fortunate truth is that Rocket Money exists. Rocket Money gives you a clear view of your expenses, letting you see your spending in one place at a glance. Rocket Money gives you the power to easily track your monthly spending, create custom budgets, and even find and cancel unwanted subscription services, and also potentially utility bills for old apartments you don't live in anymore. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when you use all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use, like subscription services, and stop paying your power bill twice, like I almost did. Thankfully didn't. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your finances the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/TANGENTS.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Now get ready for the Fact Off. Our panelists have all brought science facts to present to me in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they have presented their facts, I will judge them and I will award them Hank Bucks any way I see fit. And I could do that just out of malice.
Yeah, we don't even have to be playing a game. You could just call us one day and say, you get 100 Hank Bucks. Sarah, you lose 100 Hank Bucks.
I'm a cruel master, but I'm in charge, so whatever I say goes. Anyway, you want to do some trivia question to decide who goes first?
I guess. You're making the rules now.
We sure.
Sam and I are monkeys dancing.
I don't have it open right now. Trivia question, you guys, to decide who goes first. Outkast famously commanded us all to shake it like a Polaroid picture, but maybe he should have told us to shake it like a peacock trying to attract a peahen. In 2016, scientists published the results of a study on how peacocks rattle their train, that's what it says, to convey their interest and merits to a potential mate. I don't know if that's the actual word for a peacock's tail feathers. I feel like maybe it is. But the question is, how many times per second does the peacock shake their tail feathers?
I was so distracted by the fact that you said Outkast was a singular person that I didn't even hear the question. So I'll say 14.
Outkast is a bunch of people?
Outkast is Big Boy and Andre 3000.
Oh, wow.
Andre 3000 specifically sang that song that you were referring to.
I'm learning every day.
Wow. Okay.
I was just as distracted, but by the completely different part of the sentence, which is that it's peacocks and peahens, which makes sense for the genders of the birds.
Yeah, female peacock is a peahen. Baby peacocks are called peebees.
Wow, sciences and nature are both amazing.
So I think, well, yeah, and peebees cannot shake their tail feathers because they are not sexually mature. And so they do not have their beautiful tail feathers.
No.
I think it's going to be like, I think it's fast. I think it's like 40 shakes per second.
Baby peacocks are actually, there is a name, they're called peachicks.
Oh, yours is better.
It makes more sense.
Yeah, but PBB is better.
Petition yes. for PBB.
PBB.
We had 14 and 46. Is that what we had?
Yeah.
Ooh, gosh, this is close, actually. Sam, you are closer. It's 26.
Wow.
So not far off either of you. That's much more than I would have guessed. That's a lot of shaky. Mm-hmm. That is not how fast I go when Outkast sings.
For what unit of time are we talking?
Per second.
See, I missed that part. That's really fast.
Yeah, no, I shake my Polaroid picture far slower than a peak.
I could probably do it like 4 times a second. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. No, that I think like really, maybe one.
That seems
like
really
more, like a little more than one.
It's impossible to count 1 second and also shake your butt at the same time. So
one, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah. I can't. No, I'm not focused on the butt shake.
You can only count the shakes. Yeah.
Neither of you are trying to shake your butt right now.
I'm currently shaking my butt entirely. I just have a very still upper body.
You have good movement isolation. That's what I always say about you, Sam.
Yeah.
We got to move on. Sam goes first.
Okay. Humans love eating chicken. They love it so much that in 2020, 73 billion chickens were slaughtered for meat worldwide, compared to 332 million cattle, which is bonkers, well, right?
Chickens are much smaller.
But well, yeah, that's my next point, Hank. A chicken is 1/100th the meat of one cow. But I do think that the math still works out to that. People are wild about chicken meat, right? That's still whatever 332 million times 100 is, it's still less than 73 billion.
Yeah. Right?
Yep.
So, okay, but when you slaughter and prepare chickens to be eaten, you are left with a bunch of, you guessed it, feathers. 10% of a chicken's weight is its feathers. So that's a lot of feathers per chicken. And you can't turn feathers into leather, even though they rhyme, like you could with slaughtered cattle. So a lot of these feathers, they just end up getting thrown away or, even worse, incinerated. And as feathers break down or burn, they release sulfur dioxide, which can cause stuff like acid rain and among other bad things. So chicken feathers are sort of a big bad problem that you don't really think about all that often.
That's right.
Science, however, is on the case. And one of their proposed solutions, what if we just ate feathers?
Chicken feathers. I don't like this solution.
Chicken feathers, like fingernails and hair, like you mentioned, are pretty much made entirely of the protein keratin, and proteins can be good food if you can digest them. And digesting keratin is pretty hard.
I'm just picturing like me with just like white feathers.
And also, like Hank saying, who wants to eat feathers? But scientists don't let things like that stop them, do they?
That's right.
In 2017, a team of researchers from Lund University in Sweden published a paper identifying a strain of bacteria that is able to break the keratin in chicken feathers down into amino acids, which can then be eaten and digested by animals. These bacteria were isolated by one of the researchers on his parents' chicken farm, and I couldn't find more info about that.
Wow. But so it's found like bacteria, like eating feathers on the feather farm.
Find like a melty feather and go like something's going on here. Anyway, this particular process, I think, breaks the feathers down into just like mush. And then that mush gets added into animal feed. But
you
there are
feed
other
feed it back to the chickens.
Probably. Unfortunately, yeah. But there are other people out there that are messing around with similar processes. And in 2020, an art student worked with scientists using something very akin to this process that instead turned the feathers into something with a more meat-like color and texture.
Did you say an art student?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I think he was getting a lot of help from scientists, but it wasn't our student. This feather meat was then made into a series. This is where the art student part comes in, into a series of fine dining type dishes as sort of a proof of concept of what we could be doing with our food waste. This feather meat mimics real meat in many ways. Well, not real meat, just meat. But this feather meat mimics meat in many ways, but is reported to be entirely devoid of flavor, which is cool and also unnerving.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I guess it makes sense for like liquefied fingernails wouldn't taste like chicken. As a small aside, there are other less immediately viscerally unpleasant things that people are figuring out to do with chicken feathers, like repurposing the keratin into semi-permeable membranes that can be used in stuff like batteries, which you don't eat, except for the one batteries that I talked about that you do eat.
Yeah. Also, that I did use to put them in my mouth because they were in the freezer and I liked them being cold in my mouth.
The batteries?
Batteries were in the freezer? Okay.
Yeah, we kept the batteries in the freezer because it was supposed to keep them like alive longer.
Is that true? My facts are over. So anyway, here's my finale. All of this research could also set us up for a future where we collect all of our hair and fingernail clippings, pour some microbes on them, and then it's dinner time, baby.
Sam, that's such a good fact. I hate it so much.
Isn't it? The pictures, there's pictures and they're really gross.
It's so bad.
It just looks like mushy looking chicken feathers.
Oh my God. Like the future where, you know, you just like put a couple of tablespoons of feather dust into your curry because you need the protein.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to mush. And you definitely feed it back to the birds.
Yeah.
But like, is that weird? I don't know. I'd eat my hair if I could. I feel like it's better than feeding them chicken meat.
That's a weird thing to say, Hank, but I totally agree with you. I would also eat my own hair if I could.
Like, I would eat human hair. Well, I'm just saying, I'd eat human hair way before I'd eat human meat.
Totally. I don't think.
Oh, yes.
I think if somebody presented me something that tasted perfectly fine or like nothing and said, I made that out of liquefied human hair, I guess I don't know what my reaction would be as I say it out loud.
Now that I've gotten this far down the sentence, I'm not comfortable finishing it.
Yeah. I think if it tasted like a chicken nugget, even if it was made from human hair.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, I'm going to eat this now.
Absolutely.
It tastes like a chicken nugget, and I like chicken nuggets. This is my whole attitude towards fake meats also.
Yeah.
If it tastes as good as a chicken nugget, I'm eating it. I don't care what it's made of. I mean, and I've been guaranteed that it's not going to hurt me.
Yeah. Yes, that too. That it is digestible and will not injure me.
Yeah.
Sam, that's nuts. How recently did they do this to feathers?
2020 is when the art student did his thing, and I think 2017 was when the first paper came out. And those researchers now have a company that makes microbes that break down all kinds of stuff, including feathers, kind of on a large scale level.
You know, I want to sign up. I want to eat the feather mush.
I bet we can get some.
You said that they were like in Europe somewhere?
Yeah, Sweden.
All right, I'm going. Sweden sounds great.
I mean, they can mail you some, I bet.
Yeah, I want to go to Sweden.
Okay.
All right, Sari, you have quite a hill to climb here. I am really astounded by this feather protein mush.
It's an uphill losing battle, but I'll do my best. The Namaqua sandgrouse is a very cute little bird that lives in the dry deserts and savannas of the southern part of the African continent, like around Namibia, Botswana, and South Africa. And somebody on the citizen science website eBird really has it out for them because they are described as, quote, a dumpy, short-legged, pigeon-like bird that shuffles awkwardly on the ground and flies in a fast and direct manner, singly or in groups. Which feels a little like bullying to me, honestly. Leave him alone.
Dumpy is not a descriptor of science stuff.
They do kind of look like pigeons, but with pointy tails. But looks can be deceiving because adult male sand grouse have a very special adaptation hiding underneath that dumpiness. They can soak up water using their tummy feathers and fly it back to their babies to drink.
Oh, wow.
First formal paper describing how these feathers worked was published in July 1967 by Tom Cade and Gordon McLean, estimating that male sand grouse could soak up around 25 milliliters of water, which is around 15% of their body weight. And even with evaporation, they estimated that the sand grouse could still deliver a good amount of that, like 10 to 18 milliliters, to their nests around 10 to 30 kilometers away. So flying quite a distance in the dry desert, still have water. And in April 2023, Lorna Gibson and Yachen Mueller did a more detailed analysis on the structure of these feathers using modern microscopy tools to see what was going on. Basically, what they found was that these belly feathers have two separate parts. There's like an outer part with straight barbs, those like the feather offshoots from the central shaft. Mm-hmm. And then the inner part closest to their flesh has a tight coiled structure. So when they get wet, the tightly coiled part unwinds, becomes like straighter, featherier, and provides a lot of surface area for water molecules to grab onto and kind of like form this, I don't know, in the way that water bunches up through capillary action and surface tension, like form this lump of water.
Yes.
And each feather basically becomes a separate like tube sponge structure holding onto water on their bellies.
It's a sponge.
And it's like not a coincidence. These males go into the water and they shimmy around for like 5 minutes and soak up water. And it's specifically the males because they looked at the tummy feather region in females as well. And it's smaller and the feathers aren't structured to hold as much based on the same absorption tests of just like putting water on the feathers, which is weird on its own. And then they mentioned at the very end of the paper, because I think modern papers, they're like, what's the point of this? I think they wanted to look into it because it was really weird, but it may also help us design some like water soaking or capturing technologies inspired by these tummies.
It's like a camelback, but it's a bird belly.
Yeah, we can create a competing company to Camelback. Who needs Camelback water?
Birdfront. It's called Birdfront. And you can have each both on at the same time, and then you'll be real hydrated.
If I had one of these birds and I squeezed it, the water come out.
You have a little I think.
Neither of these papers did say how the chicks suck the water out of their tummies. I assume that they just kind of
just get in there.
Yeah, exactly like that. But yeah, I imagine that you'd be able to scoosh it out. You too, as a human, it wouldn't be very much water. It's a lot bird. Of water for a baby bird, but 10 milliliters of water is not very much.
I do like the idea of just being in the desert and just like where like no water at all. And then I find a bird and I'm just like licking a bird.
Yeah. Who's the survivalist guy?
Bear Grylls.
Bear Grylls.
He's always, yeah. He's always out there licking birds.
Yeah.
Yep. Slurping down a bird.
So I have to choose between chicken feathers being a source of pollution, but maybe they're a source of nutrition, or Sari and the male sand grouse belly feathers soaking up water like a sponge to feed their little cute little
That's bunnies. Really cute.
That's more cute. It's pretty cute, but it's not as fascinating. It's not as fascinating as a bowl full of feather gruel.
I think I'm on a hot streak. I think I'm winning this season.
Sam, you were trouncing me this season.
Honestly, sometimes I feel bad about it.
Wow. Sam's figured out that the calculus.
The magic formula, yeah.
Maybe it's just that Sari has too many epaulettes. What's it called?
Yeah, that's
yeah, I've got too many epaulettes. They're all over me. They're hiding my eyes. They're hiding my ears. Weighing down my brain.
Epithets.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then I'm a fraud. I worked so hard to get them and then gave up completely. Sam's bringing his A game this season.
That's right. And now it's time for Ask the Science Couch, where we ask a listener question to our virtual couch of finely honed scientific minds.
Sky on Discord asks, do feathers grow entirely within the skin and then come out as a hole, or do they get extruded like hairs? Yeah, when you put it that way, it kind of gross, isn't it?
I think they get extruded like hairs.
I would guess they come out all twisted up and then they go poof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the question?
That is it. And that's the answer.
But they come out like one bit at a time.
Yeah. They do get extruded. And so like a hair, the tip is the oldest part and the base is the newest part. But unlike a hair, there's more stuff going on. The outermost layer of a developing feather that is being extruded from a feather follicle is a sheath that disintegrates later to let the feathers pop out. And then the middle layer within that sheath is all the keratin filaments. So the stuff that will form the central bit called the rachis, and then the barbs. They're all made of the same material, just compacted in different ways, where like the barbules are the most feathery, and then the barbs are less, and then the rachis is like the toughest little bit. And then within that is the pulp, which is like yucky to think about, that there's pulp inside feather, but it's got to be there because it's got to grow, which is like fibroblasts and blood vessels and feather all the marrow stuff providing. Yeah.
And it goes all the way up the stick?
It goes all the way up the stick. Yep.
It's in there the whole time?
It's in there during development. Oh, and then as the sheath, the feather sheath disintegrates, and then the feather fans outward to let the barbules and the barbs fan out, then also the pulp gets disintegrated. Whoa. And will slough away to allow the central vein of the feather to open up.
Okay.
Which also makes sense because you need them to be light so that you can fly and whatnot. But it is very weird to think about. And you can kind of see it. So there are two types of, I guess it's a spectrum, but there are two main categories of birds, of all organisms when they're babies. There are attritional organisms and there are precocial organisms. And attritional organisms are ones that are like helpless when they pop out of their egg or the womb or whatever. Human babies are attritional. Any sort of like naked baby bird, parrots, pelicans, things like that, they're just like fleshy, they're pink, they can't do a damn thing. They can't protect themselves. They can't walk around or feed themselves or fly or whatnot. Those are often really interesting to look at because you see these like feather spikes come out. But then the precocial birds and the chicks, those are the ones that tend to grow feathers within the egg still. And so they do all this like weird growth. And those are like chickens where they come out already pre-fuzzy.
Okay.
And are more able to like walk around and eat, and they're not fully fledged. They're not like full giant feathers. I think there's one group of birds that I don't have the name of right now that does come out like almost fully adult from the egg. It's like super precocial, but
I was picturing like a little hawk hatching out of an egg and just going, pyong!
It is a weird, it's like a ground bird. I think it's kind of like a turkey, and it buries its eggs in mounds of dirt.
Oh.
And then they just like emerge from the dirt mound, like little, little adult men.
This is weird, but the turkey gives birth to men. Human men.
Little ones, but still.
Little human men.
Little ones. They're called megapode birds, I think.
Megapode. Oh, yeah. And they put it on top of the rotting compost to keep it warm.
Wow. That's smart. Animals.
Too smart. That's how you make a human man.
That's you take some rotting compost, a little sand insulation,
put some baseballs in there, and a man pops out. Baseballs are just man eggs. Don't tell Ken Griffey Jr. All right, that makes sense. Thank you, Sari. If you want to ask the Science Couch your questions, you can follow us on Twitter and on Threads at SciShow Tangents, where we'll tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week, or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on our Discord. Thank you to at Bucky's Revenge on YouTube, at JCB on Twitter, and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's really easy to do that. First, you can go to patreon.com/SciShowTangents, become a patron, get access to our Discord and our bonus episodes and our commentaries of movies. Shout out to patron Les Acre for their support. Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That's helpful and helps us know what you like about the show. And finally, if you want to share your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Jess Kempert. Our associate producer is Eve Schmidt. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bazzio. Our editorial assistant is Deboka Chakrabarty. Our sound design is by Joseph Puna Medish. Our executive producers are Nicole Sweeney and me, Hank Green. And of course, we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted. But one more thing. One of the most dramatic ways that birds lose feathers is through a fright molt when they're stressed, like when they're almost eaten. And to understand a little bit more about fright molts, in a 2006 study, researchers measured the force needed to remove feathers from around 70 bird species, specifically from the breast, the back, and the rump. And they found that on average, the butt feathers were pulled or fell out most easily, especially in solitary prey species that are known to have a, quote, high frequency of fear screams, according to around 15 years of audio data, anyway. So if you see a bird flying around without a tail, it might look pretty silly, but also that poor little guy's probably been through some recent horrors.
My butt fell off.
And it's not the scientists, though they did also do that.